silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good afternoon. We have one case for today, 2005 AP 1638, Heikkinen versus United Services Automobile Association. According to my notes, Attorney Armstrong, representing the Catholic Mutual Relief Society of America and the Archdiocese, will argue for 25 minutes. Don Krakthauser will argue for 18 minutes. Representing State of Wisconsin, Department of Health and Family Services, and Tommy Thompson, Secretary, Department of Health and Human Services. 12 minutes for Mr. Johnson, Attorney Johnson, representing the United Services Automobile Association, and Margaret Morse. And in rebuttal, Mr. Armstrong will argue for 5 minutes. Got it? Is that correct? All right. We'll start with Attorney Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong, please. There's an empty chair, and it's Justice Crooks. He is not participating.
May it please the Court, my name is Tom Armstrong with the firm.
He advised you all, did he?
Yes, Your Honor, he did.
Okay. Thank you.
The firm of Von Briesen and Roper, with me at counsel table, is my co-counsel, Mr. Frank Steves, representing the Catholic Mutual Relief Society of America and the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. The principal issue before the court in this case concerns 42 words of a coverage provision contained in a certificate of insurance issued by Catholic Mutual to the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, the certificate holder. The critical language is contained in our appendix. That's page 171 of the appendix, section 2 of the certificate. And that language provides that the certificate covers the ordinary, his successor in office, any officer, board member, employee, volunteer, servant and or agent, individually and or collectively, of a protected person while acting within the scope of their duties or in their official capacity as such. It has been the petitioner's position in this litigation throughout that this coverage provision is clear and unambiguous. And it provides coverage in this particular case, as is relevant, to a volunteer of a protected person. And the relevant protected persons in this case would be Christ King Parish and the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, while acting within the scope of their duties or in their official capacity as such, meaning that as such volunteer for Christ King or the Archdiocese. This provision provides that if an individual is performing a duty undertaken for a protected person, there is coverage. And the key here is that the duty has to be undertaken for a protected person. The respondents...
Counsel, before you move on, I understand your argument, but there is an or under the coverage provision, or in their official capacity as such. So wouldn't this provide coverage if the individual was a volunteer, official capacity, for either Christ King Parish or the Archdiocese?
Well, Your Honor, the term or in their official capacity as such, I believe that is added in this because several of the covered persons here do not really perform duties. An officer of a company does not perform a duty. He or she assigns duties. The same is true with an ordinary or a board member. Volunteers, much like employees or servants, are assigned duties.
Not necessarily. As I understand it, volunteers often are assigned duties, but volunteers may often volunteer to do something specific that they want to do. That's the concept of being a volunteer. You're doing it on your own. So I guess, and that's why I asked the question, because if we're talking about policy language and we're talking about coverage, the policy, as I understand it, covers anyone who is either acting within the scope of their duties as long as they're one of the pre-mentioned individuals, or if they're acting in their official capacity as such.
Okay, that would be official capacity as a volunteer for Christ King. If you were acting in your official capacity as a volunteer for Christ King, the respondents in this case have never claimed that this provides a different coverage standard than acting within the scope of one's duties. And in fact, this court in if I take a moment here, I have the case.
I'm sorry, I have to just double back. I think a board member has lots of duties. I think an officer has lots of duties. It's usually spelled out in the bylaws, and that the officer has the duty to manage in the interest, has a duty to be loyal. I mean, there are loads of duties.
Well, I believe those are duties that may be prescribed in writing, that they have duties. They also have much discretion to perform
Absolutely.
As they see fit.
Absolutely. But when they exercise their discretion and perform a duty for the company or the entity, you don't think they're liable under this?
If they're performing a duty for the entity, of course, they have coverage.
Right.
If they are performing a duty, whether that duty is assigned by someone higher up or by a document saying that this is one of your duties, if you are in the course of performing that duty, then yes, you are covered. I would, just to get back to Justice Butler's question. In State v. Barrett, which is 96 with second 174, this court held that those two terms are essentially synonymous, that when an individual is acting in his or her official capacity, he is doing what he or she is supposed to be doing for the entity for which it is acting. So he or she is performing a duty in the official capacity. In this case, it would be a volunteer of Christ King doing what he or she is supposed to be doing, much like the phrase acting within the scope of duty. And it's this critical notion of doing what you're supposed to be doing or having a duty, which I think is the critical focal point in this case. In order to be performing a duty or to be doing what you're supposed to be doing, that must be communicated to you.
Well, if I can ask, maybe I misunderstood the argument. I thought the argument wasn't so much whether a person was performing a duty or acting in a capacity as a volunteer. I thought the issue focused on who they were a volunteer for.
Well, that's the way the respondents would like to focus the issue. The respondents would like to say you're a volunteer for someone if you're acting in such a way that it provides a benefit to them or is on their behalf.
But I thought your argument was that, look, this individual is a volunteer for the Legion, not for the archdiocese.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Not for the parish. And so as a result, there's no coverage here.
Well, that's absolutely correct. She was a volunteer for the Legion of Mary. That's undisputed. She was performing duties for the Legion of Mary. The Legion of Mary made the assignment to her to deliver these statues. That is undisputed in this record. It is also undisputed that no one from Christ King ever asked Mrs. Morris to deliver anything, much less a statue. It's also undisputed in this record that no one from Christ King ever asked the Legion of Mary to perform services, volunteer services, for either the Archdiocese or Christ King. Where the Court of Appeals went astray, I would submit, is the court looked at this and said, well, she is a volunteer. She's a volunteer for the Legion of Mary, and she was acting within the scope of her duties for the Legion of Mary. Therefore, all we need to determine is to determine whether she was acting on behalf of the Legion of Mary alone or also on behalf of Christ King. And, of course, the dictionary definition of acting on behalf of would include for the benefit of. So what it boiled down to in the Court of Appeals opinion is if her activity, which was directed by the Legion, which was within the scope of her duties for the Legion, in any way benefited Christ King, then the jury could make the finding that she was acting on behalf of Christ King or the Archdiocese protected persons.
Counselors, I understand your argument, and if I get off the track, I hope you'll correct me. Your argument is that the Court of Appeals got off the track because they started out with the language from the exclusion, which is broader than the language of coverage. And so because the jury didn't have a question on whether her delivery of the statute was within the scope of her duty for either Christ King or the parish, they lacked the first step to first find coverage and instead went to the broader term of on behalf of, instead of having both standards to deal with.
Is that well, that correct? Is correct, Your Honor. Obviously, in order to get to the exception, and I think you use the word exclusion, but it's actually an exception
right.
to the exclusion.
Thank you.
But you're absolutely correct. What the step that was skipped by the jury and by the Court of Appeals is to answer that initial question, which is exactly the way this Court has described how one goes about interpreting insurance policies.
Right. So you would have had the question that's in the verdict, but you would have another question in the verdict, which is, first of all, was it within the scope of her duties?
That is within a scope of her duties as a volunteer for Christ King.
Right. Or the archdiocese.
Or the archdiocese. Any protected person. Protected person is the word that's used in the certificate.
Who is listed as a protected person on the ledger pages?
There are 192 organizations that qualify as protected persons on the ledger pages. The certificate holder, obviously, is a protected person. All of the parishes within the archdiocese are protected persons. So if we look at the ledger pages, which I do not have it marked, but there are 192 organizations. One of those organizations is not the Legion of Mary. The Legion of Mary is not a protected person under the certificate. And while we're on that subject, I would call to the Court's attention once again on page 171 of our appendix, right beneath the critical coverage language in this case. With respect to Section 2, we drop down on the same page. It says, with respect to Section 2, when so designated by endorsement, this certificate also protects an additional protected person, but only with respect to their liability for the protected person's activities they perform on behalf of the protected persons or the certificate holder. So on the very same page that in which we deal with the coverage provision at issue in this case, we have a coverage provision that does afford coverage to additional protected persons acting on behalf of a protected person. It would be unusual, to say the least, if this provision were treated the same as the provision above it. I mean, there would be no need for it whatsoever. Obviously, the draftsman of the policy distinguished between persons acting on behalf of protected persons and persons who are acting within the scope of duty to a protected person. And I would like to add that the amicus brief in this case, and I believe in one of respondents' briefs, there is an attempt to use the exception to the exclusion referenced earlier, where the language states that if an automobile is being operated by a protected person, there is no coverage. The exception to the exclusion says, but if you're driving your own automobile on behalf of a protected person, this exclusion does not apply. There's been an argument that that language creates some ambiguity in Section 2, and I would say that that is completely untrue. There is no ambiguity between those two provisions. One must satisfy the coverage provision. All the exception to the exclusion is informing the reader that someone who operates his or her own automobile on behalf of a protected person, that will not be deemed an automobile operated by the protected person, which would trigger the exclusion. There is some suggestion, as I say, that there's ambiguity here, and there is a citation to the well-accepted proposition of contra preferentum, which means that if there's ambiguity in this policy, you construe it against the insurer. That applies where the person claiming coverage isn't insured, is a party to the contract. In this case, the claimant, Margaret Morris, who's claiming coverage, is not a party to this insurance contract. She is what is referred to as a third-party beneficiary. Now, she did not know about this particular certificate of insurance. There's no question about that. There's no dispute that she never paid for coverage. This particular certificate was unearthed after the accident. And Ms. Morris is claiming coverage as a third-party beneficiary. And in Wisconsin, in order to assume the rights under a contract to which you are not a party, the key is to establish that the intent of the contracting parties, in this case the contracting parties would be Catholic Mutual and the Archdiocese, intended to afford Mrs. Morris rights under this contract. So Ms. Morris does have the burden to establish that she was intended to be covered if she were acting on behalf of.
Counselor, does Christ King Parish operate a parochial school?
Yes, it does.
Do you have a Girl Scout or Boy Scout troop that's associated with that parochial school?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I can't say.
Are there other organizations besides the Legion of Mary that are made up of parish members that are not listed as a covered person?
I am not aware of any organization that is comprised solely of parish members. Obviously, there may be parish members in a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout troop, and there may be instances where the facilities of Christ King would be used by members of a Boy Scout troop or a Girl Scout troop or other charitable nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. I don't believe they're comprised exclusively, to my knowledge, of members or parishioners at Christ King. Christ King does have a volunteer program called the Time and Talent Program, in which parishioners may join, and they are directed or asked to perform volunteer acts. And in that case, those persons are covered. The testimony in this case was unequivocal from both the Archdiocese and Christ King that if a priest ever directed someone or asked someone to perform a volunteer task for Christ King or for some enterprise that Christ King was putting on, some program, that they would be covered.
This Time and Talent organization is covered because they only do tasks that are requested of them by parish priests?
The whole purpose of the Time and Talent program is to volunteer services for Christ King. They would be covered. They would be covered in the instance where a priest does direct them to perform some voluntary activity, which would, of course, make it a Christ King program. This statue delivery program that we're talking about here today was a program devised solely by the Legion of Mary. This is a program that was of its own making. It makes all of the decisions as to how to carry out the program, who to deliver statues to, when to deliver them, how to deliver them, and by what means these statues are delivered. These are all decisions that are made by an independent organization called the Legion of Mary.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Just what is the relationship of the Legion of Mary to the Archdiocese or to Christ King? Where do they sit? Do they have a room in the church or in a building that the church owns?
They do not, Your Honor. They are permitted to use some of the church facilities. They do meet, I believe it's a monthly meeting, on church premises. They do make use of a copy machine. They are not given any financial support by the church. They are not
charged for the use of the facilities or the copying machine?
They are not charged for the use of the copy machine, as I understand it, Your Honor.
Who is the head of it?
Who is head of the Legion of the local? He testified that's George Wyand. He is the person in charge of the local Legion of Mary, which is comprised of individuals, parishioners at Christ King Parish. Although, once again, there's no requirement that a member of the Legion of Mary be from Christ King Parish in this particular instance.
They are.
In this case, the four members at the time of the accident were all members of Christ King Parish. It's a very small group.
I think it's getting smaller.
The largest it ever was in terms of association with Christ King was 16. The Legion of Mary was founded in 1923. It was founded in Ireland, and it's got a complete hierarchical structure. It's its own entity. It has no legal relationship to the Archdiocese, to Christ King, or to the Church, period.
Counsel, if I could refer you to page 6 of the Häkkinen brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's some representations made on that page involving the relationship between the Legion and Christ King. The Christ King Parish Priest has the ultimate authority over all of the Christ King Legion of Mary's activities. The rules provide that volunteers will refrain from engaging in any kind of service without the express sanction of the parish priest, and that volunteers are at the disposal of the Archdiocese and parish priest to perform acts of social service, and that the group's handbook acknowledged the priest as its ultimate authority. Now, are these representations incorrect?
Your Honor, I think they're perhaps a little misleading in the sense that the ultimate authority, there's testimony to rebut the fact that the ultimate authority is the priest. The ultimate authority is the organization in Ireland. I mean, there is a hierarchical structure here. What the Legion of Mary has done is it's pledged its fealty to the church. This is unilateral. This isn't an agreement between the church and the Legion of Mary. But the Legion of Mary has formed itself to be at the disposal of the priest or the church if and when the priest or the church wishes to use the Legion of Mary. As I stated a few minutes ago, Christ King Parish never made use of the Legion of Mary in the period 1994 to 2003. That is part of the record. So when we look at these representations in the brief, it is true that there is testimony that the Legion of Mary would obey a directive by a parish priest. If a parish priest says, I don't want you to do the statue delivery program, he doesn't have any legal authority to forbid that, but they would adhere because they are out of respect for the church. I mean, this is a religious organization. And as a religious organization, I think it's not surprising that that organization would, if directed by the Pope, for example, or a priest, or the archbishop, or a bishop, would likely follow what that individual is telling them. So if that individual would say, we don't want you to do something, more than likely they would obey. But that is out of a fealty to the church. It is not out of any kind of legal obligation. It is not the result of any agreement between the Legion of Mary and the church, or the parish, or the archdiocese.
How is this any different, for instance, than the Knights of Columbus? Or every parish has a number of organizations, and some more popular than the others. But most parishes have Knights of Columbus. Is your argument the same with regard to them? They have a hierarchical structure. Their home office, I think, is in Boston.
Well, the focal point of my argument comes back to the certificate. The certificate really, I think, dictates the outcome in this case. This is a contract. The certificate is a contract. And what that contract says is that we will provide insurance coverage to an individual, in this case a volunteer or an employee or an agent, if they are performing an activity that they have undertaken, become obligated, in at least a moral sense, to perform, either as an employee or a volunteer. If I volunteer my services to you, and you say, yes, I accept that volunteerism, and I'd like you to do X. I'd like you to drive to the grocery store to pick me up some groceries, and I unfortunately run into someone doing that. I am acting within the scope of a duty that I've undertaken to you, even though I'm not compelled to do it.
Counselor, I think what Justice Bradley was getting at, and what I was trying to, perhaps not as artfully, is to find out your opinion about organizations that are obviously affiliated with the church, how much of what they do can be collapsed into a duty or obligation on behalf of the parish. And, you know, I asked you about Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts because I was kind of wondering about something, if an accident happened with someone who is a volunteer for the parish's Boy Scouts. And she's asked you about the Knights of Columbus, which could be affiliated with a particular parish, and how much of their activities could be collapsed into and imputed to the parish.
Well, the key there, Your Honor, I believe, is once again, and I believe it was Justice Ziegler that asked, we are dealing with a certificate that lists protected persons.
So they have to be listed.
They have to be listed. That is precisely what this contract provides.
If the parish is protected, then you get back to the question of whether or not there's a broader definition for volunteer, or you get into your agency. I mean, the question is, you know, all of these organizations make up the fabric of the local parish in many ways.
Well, I'm in a sociological sense, perhaps that's part of the fabric of the parish because there are parishioners involved. What we're dealing with here, however, is an express contract. This is a contract of insurance, and all I'm saying is let's abide by the terms of that contract. And I don't think the contract is in any way ambiguous. This contract, not surprisingly, provides that if an individual is performing a duty that he or she has assumed to perform for a protected person, and in order to be performing a duty, I keep coming back to the word duty, that is an obligation. You become obligated to do that. And you can perform an act on behalf of someone and yet have no obligation whatsoever to perform the act.
I'm trying to understand this case. Let's see if I at least can understand it, let alone answer it. We agree that the driver of the car, well, you agree, was a volunteer.
She was a volunteer for the Legion of Mary, yes, Your Honor.
Your position is she was a volunteer for the Legion of Mary, and the Legion of Mary is not covered under this policy, therefore you don't pay. That's your position.
Well, she was a volunteer for the Legion of Mary, that is correct, and she was also performing a duty that she had assumed to perform for the Legion of Mary.
No, but it doesn't matter. The Legion of Mary is not covered under your
policy. The Legion of Mary is not covered under this policy.
You don't care whether she was within her scope or not, if it was the Legion of Mary.
If she is acting as a volunteer for the Legion of Mary as opposed to Christ,
then
she is not covered. That's correct.
Now, the defendants, the plaintiffs, of course, want to get her in as a volunteer of an entity that you are covering. That's their position, as I understand it.
Well, I don't think that they claim that the Legion of Mary is covered.
Right. There was no question. Was there a question that asked for whom was she a volunteer?
No, Your Honor, there was none.
That's your problem, isn't it?
That is certainly one of the big problems with this case. All the jury was asked, the only question the jury was asked was she acting on behalf of Christ King or the Archdiocese? And my position is that does not trigger coverage as a matter of law.
And your position, to state it differently, but I think the same, is asking her if she was a volunteer on behalf of these two entities is not the same as asking whether she was a volunteer for either one of these two entities.
I'm not sure I follow, Your Honor.
Well, if the jury says that the driver here was a volunteer for Christ, for Church Christ, or they aren't.
They didn't find that. The jury did not say that.
Were they asked that?
No, they were not.
You think they weren't asked?
They were not.
The language was on behalf of.
The language was on behalf of. The question is, if we could read it directly, was Morris driving her automobile on behalf of Christ King or the Archdiocese?
Nant didn't ask really whether she was a volunteer within her scope of duty.
That is absolutely correct.
Either one of
the answer to that question cannot form a predicate for coverage. That's
you
correct.
You think that it has to go back?
Your Honor, I submit that it absolutely has to go back because the jury made no finding that triggers coverage. In my mind, the only issue is whether this court could determine from the evidence whether as a matter of law she was performing any duty for Christ King, and I respect this court's decision on that. I think a good case can be made for the proposition that the evidence could not support such a finding. But at a minimum, Your Honor, I believe the case would have to go back for the jury to make a factual finding as to whether she was acting within the scope of her duties for Christ King.
I was going to suggest to you that if I had read the entire record, which I have not, there's a separate box over and beyond that, that there's probably some evidence in here that she may have volunteered directly or indirectly for Christ King or the Archdiocese, and also evidence to say that, no, she was only acting for the Legion of Mary, and that the two or the three entities are just, that the Legion is not tied in sufficiently for your policy.
That's
your position.
If I could respond, it may be that the record would show that she had done some volunteer work, perhaps sacristy work, as a parishioner at some time. But on the day of this accident, she was performing no duty that she had assumed to perform for Christ King. None.
There may be enough in here that shows that the Legion was somehow sufficiently affiliated to take on the coloring of the Archdiocese or. Otherwise, you'd say you wanted a verdict, you wanted this dismissed.
Well, Your Honor, we have said that in the brief. Our position is that normally this case should go back, but on this record, we believe no reasonable jury could make a finding that she was acting within the scope of her duty to Christ King on the day of the accident. And so we believe that the judgment should be reversed and entered on behalf of my clients.
Thank you, counsel.
Could I?
Yes, Justice Prosser.
Mr. Armstrong, are there some other things that the Christ King Legion of Mary did besides deliver these statues?
Your Honor, there is some reference in the record that some of the Legion members may have made bereavement calls, may have visited newborns, but I can tell you without qualification that the evidence in this record shows that any activity that was under, certainly the statute delivery program is their primary function, but whatever else they may have done was certainly done at their own direction, much as the statute delivery program. Christ King, no representative of Christ King or the Archdiocese, has ever asked the Legion of Mary to do anything, at least in the period 1994 to 2003. There was some suggestion in the record that at one time there may have been a request that the Legion participate in a church census in the late 70s or early 80s. But in the relevant time period here, from 94 to 2003, the Legion was an autonomous organization functioning on its own. And while the church does not disapprove of its activities, doesn't forbid them, the church has never requested the Legion to perform any of these functions.
And this sort of follows the track that Justice Butler asked. On page 4 of Mr. Prochthauser's brief, the purpose of the Christ King Legion of Mary is to serve the Christ King parish and assist the parish priest. Do you dispute that at all?
Well, in their handbook, I believe that's drawn from the handbook, when they draw up their handbook, they are there at the disposal of the parish priest or the archbishop or a bishop. I mean, they are there if a priest wishes to use them, they, at least by their own doctrine, should abide by that request. And so certainly they are there. They have made themselves available if requested. But there has been no request here. There has been no request for the Legion to do anything for Christ King.
Well, would it be fair to say that throughout the world, members of this organization tend to support the local priest or pastor, and in sometimes they visit newborns or bereaved or people in hospitals, but they cannot do that without the approval of the local priest.
Well, when you say approval, I think the local priest, if the priest is aware of something that the Legion is undertaking and disagrees with it, certainly the priest could inform the Legion of that disapproval. That is correct. But once again, those are unilateral, voluntary acts on the part of the Legion, and I don't think anybody's going to say that the church is going to discourage works, good works. I mean, those are good works.
Yep.
When somebody goes to help a family who is grieving for a loved one, that's a work that this church, and I think Christianity in general, promotes.
How would they find out if someone had died?
Who's they?
Members of the Legion of Mary who make bereavement visits.
Well, I think in the church bulletin, normally there is an announcement of those persons who have passed away. Typically, in a church, there is a prayer for that person during service. So I think it becomes fairly widely known, both by the bulletin, also by attendance at church, which parishioners have become deceased. And therefore, I think that's fairly common knowledge. One thing I would say, for example, there's some reference in here to delivering Holy Communion. Well, that is a sacrament, and that is closely circumscribed by the church. Only members of the Time and Talent Program, only individual volunteers are permitted to do that under the strict guidance of the priest. There are rules, and so when that occurs, there is no question that if a parishioner were involved in delivering communion to a family, to a shut-in, and an accident occurred, that person would be covered because they are doing that under the direction of the priest. This is what this certificate says. If you are acting under the direction of a priest, if you're fulfilling an assignment that the priest has made, or you're fulfilling something that the priest has asked you to do, you are covered by this policy. However...
That's a separate provision than volunteered in the scope of duties?
Well, I think that is the same provision. In other words, when I say, if a priest makes a request of someone to do an act, and that person agrees, and that's how we get into the word agency. I know there's been a lot of time spent in the briefs on agency, but that is the essence of agency. It is an agreement between two parties that one party will act on behalf of the other party agrees, and the other party directs or has the power to direct. There was never any agreement in this case with respect to the delivery of statues. There was never any discussion about doing this as a Christ King activity. In fact, if we're talking about the plaintiff's brief, we turn to page 3. At the time of the collision, she, which is Ms. Morris, was acting as a volunteer for Christ King Legion of Mary, an organization consisting of 4 members of Christ King. She was a volunteer for the Legion of Mary. Specifically, she was engaged in delivering a religious statue, which was one of the Legion's long-standing programs.
Yeah, but on page 5 it says, quote, "Nothing is done by the Christ King Legion of Mary without the permission of a parish priest." Now, you don't use that terminology. You say nothing is done by Christ King Legion of Mary that the parish priest has objected to. Now, those are 2 different statements.
Your Honor, yes.
And what does Record Appendix 228 say?
Your Honor, that was a surmise by Ms. Morris, and there was some testimony that at the beginning, way back 20 or 30 years ago, long before any of the witnesses in this case were alive, that it would have been standard practice for the Legion of Mary to, if they were going to engage in a particular program, before doing that, to get the approval. Can we do this? Is this permissible under church doctrine? Can we deliver statues? And at some point in time, obviously, the answer was yes. We do have no objection to the Legion of Mary delivering statues. Now, Father Accurate testified in this case. He was the pastor in the critical time period. He said he would never send anybody out to deliver statues. He said that was arcane after Vatican II. This is not typical Catholic practice. Would he prevent them from doing it? No, because it still promotes worship. It's still something in the, you know, in the interest of religion. However, he would never do that. This is something that after Vatican II would not be something that he would ever ask somebody to do. And he disagreed with it. But he was not going to forbid them from doing it. And when we say in general that everything has to be okayed by the priest, there was no evidence in this record, other than there was one instance, I believe, where something was being done and a priest objected to it at a meeting. But there's no evidence that every time some action has to be taken, the Legion of Mary comes to someone at Christ King and asks permission. In fact, Mr. Wieland, who testified, who's the president of the Legion of Mary, testified unequivocally he'd never talked to anyone about getting permission for anything. He just assumed that this was a program that that the Christ King parish priest had no objection to.
If I might.
Justice Butler.
And I know your red light is on, so I want to do this as quickly as I can. Your argument, as I understand it, is basically that the phrase "on behalf of" expands coverage. And takes it, and you've mentioned on page 30 of your brief, 2 potential definitions from Webster's: as the representative of or for the benefit of. And you're arguing against that "for the benefit of."
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Now, my question is this. If the record contains evidence that goes towards the first of the definitions, as a representative of, then does this case need to go back, or are we dealing with an issue of harmless error?
Well, you wouldn't affirm, Your Honor, because the judge instructed the jury to use its common sense in defining "on behalf of." We don't know what was in the jury's mind, but the jury could have made its finding of "on behalf of" simply on the grounds that somehow they concluded, the jurors,
that
the church benefited from this activity.
I understand that, but under the doctrine of harmless error, if we go back and if we look, and if there is evidence in the record to support the definition that you agree should apply here.
Well, no, I don't agree with that, Your Honor. What I'm saying in this case.
I'm talking about for the representative, as a representative of. I'm talking about what the language that you would agree would support the interpretation of this policy. Not the one that your opponent agrees, but the one that you would agree. If there is evidence in the record to support that representative of versus for the benefit for, then does this have to go?
Well, no, because that's not the language used in the policy. Let's look at the policy. My position is we've got to adhere to the coverage language. This is the coverage language. If a protected person is acting within the scope of their duties or official capacity for a protected person, if the jury finds that she was fulfilling some duty for Christ King or the Archdiocese, yes, there is coverage. But that question was never asked of this jury. This jury made no such finding. And based on what the jury found, we cannot make a determination of coverage.
Thank you, counsel. You have a few moments in rebuttal. Mr. Prochthauser.
May it please the Court. My name is Don Prochthauser, appearing on behalf of Hjalmar Häikkönen and the estate of Amelia Häikkönen. From your questions, I know it's very important for me to spend some time making sure there's an understanding of the facts, because this is a very fact-specific case, and based on the facts, the trial judge had a responsibility for formulating the special verdict question. Let me just talk for a moment about the Legion of Mary. The Legion of Mary is an organization whose idea comes from Ireland. The petitioners are correct about that. It was an idea for how people in their local parishes could serve their parish. And if you look in the handbook, if you look at any of the written material that we have included, which describes the Legion of Mary, what you see is that the Legion of Mary is under the direction of the parish priest. That was not only in writing, in Respondent's Exhibit 305 and 306, that was the undisputed testimony. This wasn't an outside organization that simply had permission to use the church. This was an organization whose sole purpose, whose reason for being, was to serve the parish and assist the priest. There was no testimony in this case to contradict that.
Prochthauser, if that's correct, then why not use the language that's in the policy? Why not use the language that they're acting within the scope of their duties as a volunteer in their or in their official capacity as such?
And the reason I believe, Justice Butler, that the trial judge did not put that question to the jury is because under the facts of this case, which I've just been talking about with and the specific fact of probably being more important than all the others regarding the relation of the Christ King Legion of Mary to the church, but that the priest had complete control over all of their activities. And so there was no question properly to be asked about whether she was in the scope of her duties. That couldn't reasonably be debated. The only thing in this case that could reasonably be debated is what petitioners have been presenting here today, and that is they offered evidence that the Legion of Mary was disconnected from the church.
The reason I asked the question is because, as I understood the record, and correct me if I'm wrong, it does appear that there was at least a debate about whether the language, either that language or language similar to that, should have been introduced before the trial court. And the trial judge, I know, was trying to simplify matters, not make them confusing for the jury. I think that was the discussion. But as I recall the record, there were at least two or three occasions where the defendants argued for the use of either this language or language similar to this as going to the jury. And so I guess, once again, my question becomes, particularly if there's evidence to support this, what's the problem with letting the jury have that language and letting them make their determination? And the reason I'm asking the question is I am concerned about the at least the argument that's been made here that on behalf of may expand liability outside that which was intended by the policy.
All good questions. In this particular case, because of the fact there could be no debate about whether she was doing what she had permission to do, whether she was within the scope of her authority, because of the fact it was undisputed that the priest had approved not only of this program, but every other program that this group of of four parishioners engaged in. The only fact question left was essentially the fact question which the Chief Justice pointed out. Was she acting for a covered party, for or on behalf of a covered party? The defendants put into evidence, they were trying to prove that the Christ King Legion of Mary was an outside organization. They were trying to prove that this was an organization not affiliated with Christ King Church. They were trying to prove that it was something similar to the Boy Scouts or something similar to the Knights of Columbus. So that's what became the fact question in this case. In doing this act, delivering this statue, was she doing it for or on behalf of a covered party? Or the jury would have been free to accept the argument of the defendants that no, the Legion of Mary is separate and distinct. They basically argued that it's an outside organization. They brought in the chief financial officer who said outside organizations are, here's the policy of the archdiocese. Outside organizations are required to obtain their own insurance. Outside organizations are required to sign a hold harmless agreement. The Christ King Legion of Mary existed at Christ King Church since 1968. They were never told they needed their own certificate of insurance. They were never told that they should sign a hold harmless agreement. And the reason is obvious. Their reason for being was to assist the priest. No one disputed that. To do acts for this particular parish. Their practice was whenever they would meet and they would have an idea on how they could serve the parish, the president of this group would sit down with the pastor, and the pastor is the head priest, and get approval for whatever program or whatever plan they had in mind. That's how the Legion of Mary functioned. The Legion of Mary at Christ King was so intimately connected with Christ King Church that Christ King gave them Christ King's tax ID number so that, and not that this organization was about money, but so that they could purchase photographs and prayer cards that they would hand out when they would make visits. Every activity that was ever conducted by the Christ King Legion of Mary, and this testimony was undisputed, was done with the permission of the parish priest. A priest was assigned to the Christ King Legion of Mary to work with them.
Does the Legion of Mary have a separate corporate or limited liability existence or anything like that?
No,
it's just called the Legion of Mary. Nothing.
They went by the name of the Mother of Christ King, Legion of Mary. These people, as is undisputed, they were volunteers who got permission to form a group within the Christ King Parish for the express purpose of serving the Christ King Parish. Nothing else. They're not a social group. They're not a fundraising group. Their mission is to help the clergy, the priests, and the parish.
Do they get any money?
No money is involved.
Who bought the statues?
Right.
I'm sorry, what?
Who bought the statues?
I don't want to say no money is involved. The members would use their own funds for whatever items.
Four members of the Legion.
At the time of this incident, it was four. In the past, it had been a somewhat larger group. But they would use their own money. They weren't a fundraising group. They didn't ask for money from the church. They didn't, through the Legion of Mary, give money to the church. Their mission was to reach out into the community and do the work of the church. And that was the truly all undisputed in the facts.
Counselor, it's the work of the church as they saw it, apparently, according to some testimony, because at least one of the priests that testified said he didn't believe in, after Vatican II, taking out blessed statutes to families. Isn't that true?
Yes. Father Akrit testified that, and he hadn't been at the parish very long, and he said he wasn't very familiar with them, and he said they probably had a somewhat different view of Catholic service than he did, but he did agree, and I think this is critical, that any policy put in effect by a predecessor priest or pastor, the head priest, would remain the policy of the parish, and he hadn't revoked anything that had been done. So the truth of the matter is that Father Akrit admitted he personally had little to do with the Christ King Legion of Mary. It was Father Nowak who was assigned to the Christ King Legion of Mary at the time this occurred. There was also a question asked of Mr. Armstrong about who's in charge. You know, is it someone in Ireland or is it the priest? That question was asked of the president of this four-person group, George Weiland. Who's in charge? And basically his answer was that the priest trumps anything else. There was no one in charge of them other than the priest. They acknowledged
How often did they meet with the priest he could tell them what to do? How often did they go meet with the priest so he could tell them what their course was?
And I apologize for the lack of precision in my answer, but we're talking about an organization that began in 1968 and, to my knowledge, continues through this day. But what the testimony provided was, it was twofold in that regard, that there was always a priest assigned to the organization. As years went on, the attendance of the assigned priest dwindled. And the explanation given was a shortage of priests. There just wasn't, there weren't as many priests available to attend. The other time that there would always be meetings with the pastor or the head priest was whenever there were ideas about engaging in some sort of new program, doing something different. And it was, this testimony was undisputed that they never engaged in any activity without the permission of the parish priest, without making sure that this program fit with his view of what they should be doing. And they said there, over all these years, there was one occasion when he told them to discontinue an activity, but the parish priest was in charge of their actions. And so any time there was a new program, they would meet with the parish priest. It's been suggested by petitioners that it somehow is critical that who came up with the idea, whether it would be, and their activities range from visiting shut-ins, bereavement calls, a census of the parish community, sacristy work, doing cleaning at the church, and then their major activity was the statue delivery program. The question was asked, well, whose idea was this? Which always seemed to me to be a question that sort of misses the point of whether someone has authority to do what they're doing or to act on someone's behalf. It would seem to me it would be very similar to if one of your law clerks would say, I'm planning on doing this research on the Smith case. Would that be okay? I don't think that puts the law clerk out of the scope of her employment because it was her idea. I mean, what we have here is testimony of the intimate relationship between the Christ King Legion of Mary members and the
Counselor, I have just a very small technical matter. I noticed when you started out, you said you represented the estate of Amelia Häkkinen. And the Court of Appeals opinion still uses her as a party. Has a substitution of party been filed with us and all that?
That amendment has just taken place,
okay.
Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
In question 1 and 2 of the special verdict, they're answered by the court. Was that after hearing testimony? Was that upon stipulation of the parties? Was that?
I apologize.
The negligence of Margaret Morrison, whether that was a cause of the collision, it was answered yes by the court. So that wasn't an issue that the jury was weighing and deliberating over. They were.
Actually, I didn't think it was an issue, but it wasn't stipulated to, so that was on the special verdict. Regarding the comparison of negligence between Margaret Morris and Mr. Heikkinen.
Okay, so the issue the jury was primarily called upon to decide was the relationship of Ms. Morris to Christ King Parish and then damages.
That's correct. Yeah.
That was the crux of the case.
The facts of the accident were tried and were presented. They seem pretty straightforward to me, but that was part of the case, and so there were jury questions on negligence and the potential for comparison of negligence.
How did the jury come up with $16,308,000?
You mean why was the amount that large, or do you want me to break it down as?
No, that large.
Unfortunately, I believe the amount was that large because the injury was that horrendous. No one would want to trade places with Mr. Heikkinen for any amount of money. He is a quadriplegic. He is in pain at all times. He is completely dependent on his family members 24 hours a day for his care. He's totally aware of his situation. He was an active and a vital person. Before this happened, he was still working as a barber 1 or 2 days a week. He suffered an amputation as a consequence of decubitus or bed sores, which he developed. He has no control of bladder or bowel function. He can't feed himself. It's a horrendous injury.
How old is he?
How old is he? He was 82 when the collision occurred, 84 at the time of trial, I believe 87 or 8 now, Your Honor.
In going through the, while you're getting your documents together, I was looking for the jury instructions, and the best I can come up with are the judge's remarks regarding his instruction to the jury. Does anyone have the actual jury instructions that were given? Did they go to the jury?
The instructions went into the jury room. They were read by the trial judge, and then they were available to the jury. I don't recall that they had any questions.
Okay. I don't think the actual instructions are part of the record as far as I could see, other than the judge giving the instructions. They might be in the box of exhibits. It might still be back at the county courthouse. I'm not sure about that, but it might be.
Is there a particular instruction here?
I just was looking at the instructions regarding on behalf of, and the instruction that went to the jury really instructed basically that you should give the words on behalf of their common and ordinary meaning.
Yes.
If I could, Mr. Proctauser, and I know your light just came on, should this court come to the conclusion that question number 6 in the special verdict was erroneous and should have tracked the language of the policy, as opposing counsel argues. Is this the type of error that is subject to the harmless error rule, or would it necessitate a remand for a trial on that?
Your Honor, first of all, I do not believe it was error for the question to be.
No, I understand that, but just the premise of the question is, should we disagree?
Well, I quite honestly can't imagine that whatever question was put to the jury in this case would have resulted in a different answer. There is such similarity between, especially under the facts of this case, between on behalf of or for or in the scope of duties that I don't think anyone could show under these facts that the result would have been any different. I do believe, though, as I mentioned before, that the trial judge did ask the better question, given the undisputed facts and the evidence, that she did have permission to do precisely what she was doing. The better question, I believe, was the one that was asked, which allowed both parties to get at the heart of this dispute, which was whether this group of people were part of the parish or not part of the parish, whether they were an outside organization.
In summary arguments, was the issue who she was a volunteer for? I mean, did you stress she was a volunteer for the Legion, but that's really the same as to Christ King?
Did the other side say,
oh, no, separate turf, separate everything, and not covered by the policy? Is that what the arguments were?
That's really...
To the jury?
Your Honor, what I believe the argument was about, there was no question that she was volunteering. There's no question nobody suggested she was on some frolic or personal deviation, because she wasn't. There was just no testimony other than that this was a very devout woman who, since 1968, has been devoting 2 hours a week to her parish. And so the debate was whether, because she was part of an organization that didn't have the same name as the parish, the Christ King, Mother of Christ King Legion of Mary, whether that made them separate, distinct, and not part of the parish.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from Attorney Johnson.
May it please the Court, my name is Terry Johnson, and I appear on behalf of Mrs. Morris and her insurance carrier, who are defendants, third-party plaintiffs, and respondents in this field. My view of this case and how you ought to approach it is a little bit different, and that is, this case is really not about the niceties of the policy. It is about the way in which the Court conducted the trial and whether the parties, by the way in which the Court framed the question and the verdict, were deprived of the opportunity to try the issue. And the fact of the matter is, viewed from that perspective, the answer is obviously no, they weren't deprived of that opportunity. The three questions that conceivably existed under this policy that would determine coverage were, number one, was she a volunteer for anybody? Number two, was Mrs. Morse acting within the scope of her duties as a volunteer for somebody? And third, if she was a volunteer and acting within the scope of her duties, was she acting as a volunteer within the scope of her duties for Christ King? In this case, there was never any dispute she was acting as a volunteer. There was never any dispute but that she was acting within the scope of her duties as a volunteer. The only dispute, the one that was tried at length, the one that was argued, the one that was addressed, the one that was resolved by the jury was she, as the Archdiocese and Catholic Mutual argued, only acting for this separate, supposedly separate independent organization, the Legion of Mary at Christ King, or was she acting on behalf of the parish? If you review the arguments, if you review the evidence, if you review the questions and the testimony of the witnesses, nothing is more apparent than that is the issue that we were trying. As a matter of fact, even though we started out trying issues about damages and liability, by the time we got to closing argument, counsel for Catholic Mutual wasn't even talking about those issues for practical purposes. What we were talking about was their view of who she was acting for correct, or was the view of Mrs. Morse and Heikkinen's correct?
Counselor, isn't there another question? Whose duty was it that she was performing?
No, I don't think that's even relevant. There's no indication in policy that that is relevant.
Well, if you look under the coverage section, that's exactly what it says.
No, what it says is, was she acting within the scope of her duty as a volunteer?
For a covered organization. So it's whose duty was she performing? And that's the question that your analysis leaves out for me.
No, it doesn't, because that's not the case, way the case was tried. No one ever suggested in this trial, and I would challenge counsel for Catholic Mutual to suggest to you any place, because they haven't in their briefs, and they can't, because it's not true, to find a single place in the record where anyone suggested that because she had some generalized idea that what she was doing was benefiting the parish, that that made her covered. No one ever suggested that. That's why the court, in the proper exercise of its discretion, the one who was there and heard the evidence, heard the arguments, understood the issue, said, the only real question here is we need to have the jury decide, was she acting for Christ King or not?
Is the insurance policy an exhibit in the record?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So the first problem here is that all of the arguments that have been presented here, I suggest, ignore the dynamic of the trial. If the dynamic of the trial, the one that Judge Gooley had to deal with, is evaluated, it is apparent that this question is an afterthought, that there really isn't any issue here. The jury wasn't misled. The wording of the question wasn't improper. What Judge Gooley did is he searched, like trial judges are supposed to do, as you should encourage them to do, to find a simple, everyday English way of putting the question that we all knew was being presented, and stripping from it all of the extraneous factors which Catholic Mutual repeatedly tried to indicate. And to see this, you have to look at the series of questions Catholic Mutual proposed to the court and understand all the extraneous issues they always attempted to introduce. They tried to make the question more complicated than it was. Even the final question they arrived at asked about questions about official duties. No one ever claimed she had any official duties. That was completely extraneous to the issues in the case, and there was no reason why the court had to give it. The second question I think that you need to consider, that to me is just as obvious and simple as it can be, having lived through the trial, is why did the court have to mirror the language of the policy? No, none of the other instructions or verdict questions we do. We don't read statutes to juries when we give jury instructions. We take statutory language, which lawyers, like we are today, like we have been doing for months, can argue and debate about, like we were arguing about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and we translate it into simple language that we are sure lay people not trained in the law can understand. That's what trial judges are supposed to do. There is no legal principle. There is an invented legal principle that says if you have arcane, unusual language in the policy, that somehow dictates what the question and the verdict has to be. I suggest to you that's just, I'm sorry, nonsense. That doesn't dictate it at all. The question in the verdict has to present the issue of fact that will resolve the question the jury needs to resolve in order to get a resolution in the case.
So what was the jury instructed? What legal principle was the jury instructed to use when deciding if she was driving her vehicle in the scope of or on behalf of Christ King Parish, who is the protected person here?
Exactly the one you gave. And I'll point out two things. Number one, there's no claim on this appeal that the instruction was improper. There's no claim on this appeal that the judge should have given different instructions. The objection is to the verdict form. So, number one. Number two, the questions that they asked weren't better. They were equivalent. I think if you look at these questions, the two questions at issue are, paraphrasing slightly to take out the language they added which weren't important, say, at the time of the collision, was Margaret Morse driving her automobile on behalf of Christ King Parish and or the Milwaukee Archdiocese? Or, as they would have put it at the time of the accident, was Margaret Morse acting within the scope of her duties as a volunteer of Christ King Parish or the Archdiocese of Milwaukee? And I suggest to you that lay people, having heard this trial, having listened to the arguments of the attorneys, having considered the evidence, would see those questions as exactly equivalent. And to answer Justice Butler's question that he's asked a couple of times, this is absolutely harmless error. The fact that we might conclude that there is a slightly better way, arguably, of phrasing the question should be viewed as harmless error because the issue was fully and fairly tried. They had their day in court. They simply couldn't convince the jury against what was sometimes overwhelming evidence that this was a separate organization and she was somehow some rogue.
Counsel, let me play devil's advocate here. Maybe that's the wrong choice of words.
Well, it just depends on
it. It came out too fast. I should have thought a better way to say this, but
none.
But as I understand the insurance company's arguments, when they draft policies, they do it specifically with a number of purposes in mind. One of the things they want to do is make it perfectly clear what exactly is covered, and in part so they make sure they pay for that which is covered, and in part so that they can defend against that which they don't think they should have to pay for. And so they're very picky about the language. We have a number of insurance cases that come up before this court where we deal with issues, and we're really parsing language, exactly what's covered and what's not. And as I hear opposing counsel's argument, what opposing counsel is saying, look, we drafted this language. This is what's in this policy. This is what we're prepared to pay for. This is what the jury ought to decide. And to the extent, and I suspect this would be the argument regardless of what the language is, to the extent that you start changing the language, whether you're making it clear or not, to the extent that you start changing the language that's not included in the policy, you may be changing what we may have to pay down the road. So keep it simple. Keep it straightforward. Just tell the jury what's in the policy. That's what I'm hearing from the other side.
First of all, I think there are two responses to that. First one is, of course, there's no evidence that what Mr. Armstrong says was the intent of the insurance company was, in fact, the intent of the insurance company. I could look at this policy and say, in fact, what the Archdiocese and Catholic Mutual really wanted to do is they wanted to have the policy written as broadly as possible to protect people who became involved in activities that benefited the church, were on behalf of the church, so they would have additional protection. And that construction of this policy is just as plausible as the one Mr. Armstrong has given. And I'll tell you, I know just as much about it as he does. Nothing. There's no way of knowing what the insurance company intended by writing this policy.
Court feels very reassured now.
I've been married a long time. Admitting ignorance is one of my strengths, Judge. The second thing is, I disagree with the premise. I don't think that's what we do in jury questions, and I don't think that's what we should do in jury questions. Because if we gave them that, we would read exactly the language of the policy, and what we would have then is a series of unending questions from the jury. What do you mean by this? What do you mean by this? And anyone who has drafted or had a trial with a complicated jury question knows all you do is confuse them with that. What you want to do is exercise your discretion to frame the question as clearly and simply as possible to eliminate those kinds of uncertainties. And when the trial court does that, I suggest respectfully, it is this court's job as a matter of judicial policy to back them up. That you want judges to exercise their discretion, you want them to make their decisions, and what you don't want is to encourage litigants afterwards to fly-spec these things and come in and find some way to argue that no matter how obvious it is what issue we really tried, we should look upon this like a securities prospectus, even though we all know nobody read them, though we all know nobody made the investment decision on the basis of it. When the investment goes badly, then later we have lawyers come back and find some inaccuracy that we can claim is the problem here. The last point I want to address is the evidence. The evidence in this case, with all due respect to Mr. Armstrong, he did not try the case, as the record reflects. And in several respects, I suggest that what he has said here is not a full and accurate representation of the evidence, and I'm sure it's inadvertent. I don't suggest otherwise. If there is one point which is absolutely clear here, it is that in every instance there was, the evidence was no program was ever, not this one, not some other one, ever undertaken by this chapter of the Legion of Mary at Christ King without first going to the parish priest and getting his approval, number one. Number two, it is absolutely uncontradicted in this record that once that approval is given by the pastor, and I use that word rather than priest because there's a differentiation, the Catholic Church, as most of us know, is rather hierarchical. The pastor runs the parish. He is the final say, not lay people, not another priest. The pastor makes the decisions. It is absolutely uncontradicted in this record that once the pastor says, go do that, it becomes the policy of the church, and according to the pastor they called, if a later pastor doesn't even know that's going on, That activity, once approved by a pastor 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, unbeknownst to us all, continues as the official policy of the parish.
Counselor, what case is there any that you cite for that proposition?
No, it's the testimony. It is a factual issue. The pastor himself, the representative of the parish, said that is how it works. And he admitted on the stand, if you look at his cross-examination testimony, that it doesn't, I've already told you, I didn't even know this was going on. But if, in fact, it is true that a prior pastor approved this program, the fact that I don't know about it, the fact that I might even be personally opposed to it, is completely irrelevant. It is the official practice and policy of this parish because a predecessor of mine approved it 10, 20, 30 years ago, and no one changed it since. And the last thing, which is absolutely clear in this record, is that there was plenty of evidence to support this. The only activity that ever was stopped by the Legion of Mary was stopped under specific circumstances discussed at length in the record. They went to the parish priest and they said, we want to conduct a prayer vigil in the sanctuary, in the church. He told them, if you do this, the procedures of our church, the requirements of our church require someone be there, so there is always someone as part of this prayer vigil. They agreed to do it. They started it. A day or so later, he walked in one day, and I don't know if somebody was in the bathroom or what. There was no one there. He said, stop it, and they stopped. So the argument that this is not, had not become just as much a creature of this parish, directed by the pastor, under the control of the pastor, just as I'd like to think we control our law clerks and our associates in our law firm when we tell them to do something, is simply unsupported by the record, but more to the point, since we have a verdict in our favor, supported by evidence in the record so that it can't be overturned by you.
Mr. Johnson, did you object to Catholic Mutual's proposed instruction?
Yes.
Why?
We objected to it because we thought it made the proposed instruction, proposed verdict question.
Proposed verdict question.
The verdict question, actually, I did not object to that. What I told, I fudged it. Here's what I said. I said, Judge, I think either one of them are acceptable questions. I think the Catholic Mutual question makes it too complicated. Yours is better, but we won't sit here and say your question is improper. The court then exercised its discretion to use the question the court posed. And I'm not suggesting here today their question would have been improper. It's another way of asking the same question.
Did you object to the instructions that they had submitted?
Yes.
And did the court use any of them?
To my recollection, they didn't. But again, there are narrow issues before this court on this appeal, and I don't think objections to the instructions are part of it.
You think the only objection here is to the special verdict question?
Well, there are
other than the amount of the
right.
damages, for
yes.
example. Okay. No, I meant relating to this.
With that understanding, yes.
Thank you, Mr. John.
Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong, you have several minutes in rebuttal.
I think the essential argument that I'm hearing from opposing counsel in this case is that there is coverage here because Ms. Morris was a volunteer, could have been a volunteer of anyone, doesn't matter, but she was acting within the scope of her duties to this any organization, doesn't matter who it was, whether it was a volunteer for a covered person or not. But coverage depends upon the fact that a Christ King priest at some time in the past put his stamp of approval on what the Legion was doing. And it's critical here, there is a big distinction between approving what someone is doing as a member of an unrelated organization, the Legion of Mary, and approving what someone purports to do on behalf of my organization, Christ King Church. No one, and there's no evidence in this record, ever came to the priest and said, I would like to deliver statues as part of a Christ King program or part of an archdiocesan program. Will you give me permission to do that? That's not what was asked. What was asked is whether the priest would have any objection to the legions performing this program. That does not make this a Christ King program. Just as opposing counsel admitted at page 3 of his brief, this was a Legion program. And there is testimony in this record from Father Accurate that he never understood
that anyone had ever asked permission to perform this program as a Christ King program. And that's critical because going back to the policy language.
Counsel, let me ask you about that. I want to refer, and I'm assuming this is in the record because it's noted as record appendix 306, exhibit 24, the Christ King bulletin excerpt. The last page in the supplemental appendix of the Heikkinens. And I'm reading this right from the bulletin. What is the Legion of Mary? The Legion of Mary is a group of practicing Catholics under the direction of their parish priest, helping him perform spiritual works of mercy. That's in their bulletin. This seems to be coming from the church, from Christ King, not from the handbook of the Legion. So if this is part of the record in the case, and that's why I've been asking the questions about harmless error, it seems that there's at least evidence in the record to support that they're acting under the auspices of Christ King. Am I reading this wrong?
Well, Your Honor, I think what that bulletin is repeating is exactly what the Legion handbook says it does. It is under the direction, it submits itself to the direction and control of the priest, much like what I'm just talking about now. They would have to ask permission from a priest in order to perform a Legion activity. But it doesn't change it from a Legion activity to a Christ King activity. They are subject. They have submitted themselves to the direction. The question is, the fact that the priest may have the ability to direct and control an activity doesn't mean that he has engaged in it. And if we go back to the policy language again, the policy language requires that the volunteer be of a protected person acting within the scope of their duties or their official capacity as a volunteer for the protected person. That's what is required for coverage to apply. Not that the priest may say, I approve of this Legion activity. I may not assign it, as Father Ackeret said. There's no evidence here that this was ever a Christ King activity. And in order for you to be fulfilling a duty as a volunteer for Christ King, it seems obvious to me it would have to be a Christ King activity, something that Christ King is asking somebody to perform.
Let me ask one other question. When I looked at the record below and the discussion about this issue before the trial court, I know there was discussion back and forth about what language to use, and I know there was an objection about the on behalf of language being used as part of the special verdict. But I didn't see any discussion that linked it to the exception to the exclusion, at least before the trial court. That seems to have come later. And I guess my question goes to whether, if this had not been the same language that was included in the exception to the exclusion, and it just came out as the trial court attempted to do, this is a simplification of the language, would we even be here?
Your Honor, let me state that we move for summary judgment in this case on the grounds that they were relying on an exception to an exclusion which cannot create coverage. The court denied that motion. It's also evident, and we've cited excerpts in the briefs filed by both parties. Both parties specifically said that the exception to the exclusion added coverage. It brought Mrs. Morris within the folds of coverage where it would not otherwise exist. This is what was argued in the trial court. It is cited in our brief. It is in this record. And the trial court nevertheless said it was not going to dismiss the case on that ground, and we went forward. So we have maintained all along that, A, you can't have coverage via an exception to an exclusion, and we also have the fact that both parties in this case stated that coverage was afforded by that exception to the exclusion. That's what they told the trial court.
Chief, if I may.
Justice Bradley.
Thank you. I'm looking at that part of the record that's on the bench that has your proposed or your client's proposed special verdict that was submitted before trial. And I'm looking at the questions that you submitted, and I understand you weren't counsel, but that
that's
were
correct,
submitted on behalf of your client. And with regard to the relevant question, and I'm trying to say how closely it tracks the coverage language of the policy that we've just been looking at. And question 6 says, at the time of the accident on March 25, 2002, was Margaret Morse an agent of the Archdiocese of Milwaukee? And then the next question, if you answered from question yes, then answer this question. At the time of the accident on March 25, 2002, did the conduct of Margaret Morse show that she accepted the undertaking of delivering Virgin Mary statues? It seems to me, and maybe I'm missing something, that neither of those really tracked the proffered jury and special verdict questions on behalf of your client submitted right before trial track the coverage language.
Your Honor, I could answer that. Two things. Number one, we have always maintained that in order for a person to be acting within the scope of duty, a person would have to be an agent. And the agency definition in the jury instructions uses scope of duty, so I don't understand how that language would confuse a jury. It's in the jury instructions, jury instruction 4000, excuse me, in 4025. I would also state, although I can't
4025 has what, did you say?
Scope of duty. These are, the 4025 is the...
Did you ask that that instruction be given?
Yes, 4000, Your Honor.
4025 says where a person volunteers his or her services to another, and that other accepts such services, the relation of principal and agent may result, even though there is no agreement between the parties to compensate the volunteer for his or her services, nor any expectation on his or her part to receive compensation.
Correct. Before. So principal agent is a critical element of that, and we also propose 4000, which is the agency instruction. And if that were given, we would not be here. We would have no objection because we believe that agency is exactly what would be, how a jury should be instructed in order to arrive, if we're not going to use the policy language, how to arrive at a resolution of the coverage question. Now, I will say, Mr. Steves, who did try this case, and I don't have the transcript in front of me, when the court said it would not give the agency instruction, Mr. Steves objected to the instructions and special verdict questions given, proposed by the other side, stating that the court should track the language of the policy as closely as possible. So that is a matter of record, and it was registered, and the court obviously disagreed.
At the Court of Appeals, let me just make sure I understand what's at issue here. At the Court of Appeals, there were four issues. One, bifurcation. That's not here, is it?
No, Your Honor, it's not before the court. That's correct.
Two, the formulation of the special verdict question. That is here.
Yes, it is.
Three, Morse had no coverage under Section 7 of the certificate.
That was dropped during the course of the appeal by the other side.
All right. And four, damages were excessive. That is here.
That is here.
So the two issues here are what the Court of Appeals handled as issues two and four.
The coverage issue and the damage issue. That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one brief question before
Justice
I get
Rogan
off.
Said.
Just so I'm not confusing myself, I was concerned about a question that would ask, whose duty was this? Because I was looking at the scope of the duty. But as Justice Bradley read what was requested, it wasn't in the written proposed instructions from your team. And then you said, well, then we asked for these instructions on agency. And then you said, if the trial court wouldn't go along with our request, then we asked the language of the policy be tracked. And my question to you is, tracked in regard to a question or tracked in regard to the instructions?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that if the agency instruction were not given, I'm not sure any instruction would be given in that case. I think the language should have been given to the jury, and that is, was Margaret Morris acting as a volunteer for a protected person within the scope of her duties or her official capacity for that protected person?
I understand that's your argument. My question to you is, and you may not know it because you didn't try it, so in some respects it's not a fair question. Did the man or woman who tried the case request that as a question, or did they request an instruction on it?
The Mr. Steves, who tried the case, requested that the question asked of the jury track the insurance coverage provision.
Okay, thank you. That answers.
On behalf of, does track the other part of the policy in the automobile exception.
It tracks the language in the automobile exception. We just say you never get there because that can't create coverage. And before you get there, you got to find coverage under Section 2.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorneys Armstrong and Johnson, for your arguments today in yet another case that we have relating to what is or is not covered under an insurance policy. but for a change, it's not underinsured or uninsured. So think about that. That concludes the hearing in 2005, AP 1638, Heike versus United Services Automobile Association. The court has now concluded its September arguments, and we are adjourned until tomorrow morning, when we will have an open administrative conference and then a closed conference, but adjourned on oral arguments until our October sitting. We are adjourned. The court will meet in the conference room at 3:30. Thank you.